Today, home prices. Is the glass half full? Ask New Zealand. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome, that is Post covering finance and property news. Well, the data continues to confound many economists because prices are continuing to slide. And there's been some interesting developments over the last few days with the banks reporting and also bank economists revising their forecasts down for greater falls ahead. And we also got today the REINZ data for July, which actually is a very important element in the evidence. Remember that in New Zealand, prices have been falling for not just a few months, but for years. So, when we actually look at the data, the question is there a glass half full story? Or is that being spruiked by people with frankly vested interests in maintaining optimism because, of course, they lend? Yeah, funny that. So let's start here with the ANZ now forecasting Sydney housing prices down 14.5%. And as Michael Blaby wrote, ANZ expects Sydney home prices could fall as much as 14.5% from peak to trough as the housing downturn gathers pace and extends into next year, with a recovery not expected until 2028. And they highlight the fact that capital cities are now expected to fall 4.3% on average this year. That's more than double the 2.1% that they predicted back in June. And decline next year revised to 3.4% from 3.3%. Melbourne prices were expected to drop 2.8% over the course of the downturn, but since our last forecasts, the housing market has softened a little more than we'd expected, the economist at ANZ said. Sydney and Melbourne prices have declined slightly more than our forecasts, and prices in Brisbane and Perth have started falling earlier than we expected. And they went on to say it's clear the combination of restrictive interest rates, recent tax policy changes, and global uncertainty have dampened sentiment in the market. And it's worth highlighting, they say, that the 50% capital gains tax deduction for investors in existing homes was a structural shift, and that meant that growth in investor borrowing was likely to slow, and then a reverse in contrast to borrowers by owner-occupiers. The ANZ economist said investor housing credit is likely to ease from 10.2% year-on-year in the second quarter of 2026 to a negative 0.8% year-on-year in early 2028, although owner-occupier credit should reach just a low of 3.7% year-on-year. Now, this, of course, is significant because, of course, the banks have been highly reliant on momentum in lending for housing to support their profits, as we'll see in a second. And the Commonwealth Bank highlighted in their release that loan applications from property investors plunged 28% since Labor's clampdown on housing investment tax concessions. And they said that new lending due to the slump in property markets had definitely taken a hit, despite the fact that it notched up a massive $11 billion profit in cash terms for the year to June. Yes, banks are still milking their customers. I note that the AMP chief economist Shane Oliver said it's likely that softer new lending would feed into weaker construction for new homes, even though the government's crackdown on investors does not apply to investors in newly built homes. Despite the carve-out for newly built homes, investors would still be more nervous about going into this part of the market, he said. And more broadly, CBA's numbers are seen as a bellwether for the Australian economy and the banking giant's results, which showed as expenses for impaired loans increased by 47% in the June half compared to the March half, to $788 million. So yeah, looks like there are troubling times ahead for the banks. But then, of course, Common himself says, no, no, housing fears are overdone. Sure, there was a steep fall in mortgage lending, down 15% since the federal budget. But they talked about the fact that actually there was a small rise in applications in the first week of August, grasping at straws there. And the tougher economic conditions led CBA to increase its impairments. So the question is it a good time to buy a house or not? Well, according to Matt Common, of course, completely untransparent here about his vested interests, I think not. Commonwealth Bank Matt Common says he would advise his own child to be looking to buy their first house soon, actually over the coming 12 months. And, well, that certainly does represent a glass half full view. Borrowers and first-time buyers are perhaps approaching a sweet spot where prices are falling, rates are no longer rising, and a new batch of spring real estate listings is about to hit the market. Well, except, of course, that we perhaps will see another interest rate rise from the RBA, as I discussed yesterday. And prices are continuing to fall, so why would you buy today when you can buy cheaper ahead? And yeah, higher listings is another indicator of falling prices, not lifting prices. And it's interesting that Jarden analyst Matthew Wilson, which this article suggested threw diplomacy to the wind, when he had his thoughts on the investors, home loan application trends are clearly persistently negative. Loans create deposits. This scenario has materially negative consequences for bank revenue growth. Less loans, less deposits, more competition doesn't bode well for the bank's net interest margins. Shifts happen. And actually, Common did concede that additional competition for home loans is becoming evident with the emergence of some improved deals on interest rates, which is great for some borrowers, but not for the bank's profit margins. I'd also say not borrowers with small deposits, by the way. But there is a spectre of a rocky road ahead for mortgage growth, and that's going to reignite the debate about the banks, particularly CBA's premium share price. Yes, it's overpriced, I think. But of course, this glass half full story popped up elsewhere. Chalmers, for example, has basically said, well, you know, there is a great time. Policy changes were among several factors weighing on housing markets, Chalmers said, alongside economic conditions and interest rates. But he stopped short of pointing to the government's tax changes in the May budget. Chalmers said the economy experienced house price growth over a long period, and we expect to see more modest growth over the course of the next couple of years. That's another important point, by the way. The Treasury's assumptions in the budget around house prices are assumptions for the next couple of years, not for the first few months after the budget, Chalmers told the ABC. Treasury's projections were that prices would still grow, albeit at a slower rate, and looking increasingly optimistic, I think, given the private sector forecasts that we're now seeing. And Shane Oliver highlighted the fact that Treasury's analysis was always perhaps too conservative, with the AMP estimating the government's tax changes alone would lower prices by 5% or so. The reason I thought it was an underestimate is quite simple. And that was that the after-tax return an investor now will receive from residential property is significantly less, he said, pointing to dividend discount model suggesting returns could be up to 9% lower under the new tax regime. And then we had REA's boss defying the housing sector gloom, talking about the fact that the number of buy and sell side leads are getting higher, and the volume of customers through REA's platform and own brokerage business Mortgage Choice, of course they acquired that some time ago, there's no cause for alarm on the volume front, he says. Listings in the 3 months to June were up 11% nationally compared to last year, and the pipeline for July and August have not been overly affected. And he basically aligned with Common, said you can see it's basically stabilizing and starting perhaps slightly to pick up. Well, we'll see. Optimism or glass half full? What do you think? Now, let's just talk about listings briefly, because this article highlights the fact that listings continue to surge and that points to more price falls. And there's quite a lot of information here, but listings are definitely high in some areas of Sydney, for example, Chatswood and around Melbourne, and in some other places too. And Morgan Stanley, of course, foreshadowed a 10% fall nationally, and others are actually talking about a more significant fall. Listings, of course, higher listings mean lower prices. The more people who decide to sell and accept a lower price means that vendors potentially have to take a lower bid. And prospective purchasers have a lot more choice, so they can hang around and negotiate harder and, well, frankly, just wait and see what happens. Now, it's interesting that McGrath came out and said, we think that for new buyers, this is a great time to buy because they're getting a 15% discount of what they could have got previously, except, of course, the prices could fall further. So, yeah, is it glass half full or glass half empty? Depends, I guess, on your point of view. I still think prices have got further to fall. Now, there's one other factor that we should talk about. The ABS today released the average weekly ordinary time earnings for full-time adults. And it came out at $2,083.70 in May 2026. And they said that the growth in average weekly earnings for full-time adults for the 6 months to May 2026 was 1.6%, which was the slowest six-monthly growth rate since May 2022. Remember what inflation is at the moment? It's well above 3%. So yeah, going backwards. Annual growth to May, they say, was 3.7%, which was the lowest annual increase since November 2022. And they also went on to highlight the public sector growth was stronger than in the private sector in the 6 months to May, with the public sector average weekly earning up by 2.3%, while the private sector rose just 1.4%. And they said all states and industries recorded 6 months of rises in average earnings. And the industry with the strongest growth was transport, postal and warehousing up 4.3%, followed by wholesale trade at 3.2%. And Queensland had the largest growth of all states at 2.5%, followed by the Northern Territory, which rose by 2.2%. And of course, everybody else was a bit weaker. But in a way, that is a bit deceptive because, of course, you have to adjust for inflation. And this is what Alex Joyner over at IFM did. And if you start back in 2019, you can see that in equivalence terms, we're at $1,628, which is a lot lower than the number quoted by the ABS, which, of course, is in today's terms. And Alex Joyner said that the average weekly earnings continue to deaccelerate in the first half of the year. Still at 3.5%, it's above the pre-pandemic malaise. But real average weekly earnings shows the ongoing destructive nature of inflation. And while household spending is seemingly holding up quite well, given the circumstances, consumer sentiment is very weak. Because people don't feel that they're getting ahead. And in fact, in real terms, they're not. And to me, this is one of the other reasons why households are holding back. I see that in my surveys. I see it in my mortgage stress. And the latest ABS data continues to reinforce the same trends. People are having less capacity to spend in real terms. And that's going to put ever more pressure on home prices and affordability too. Oh, and by the way, just remember, of course, that in real terms, prices have doubled relative to incomes over the last few years, once again highlighting the affordability problem. But let me just cross to New Zealand, because it's worth highlighting, and this is from Tarek, this chart. New Zealand house prices have fallen for the last 55 months. And I guess the question is Australia now beginning to follow that trend? If so, we are in the very early months of a significant fall, where in some cases, prices, for example, in Wellington, have dropped 30% from their peak, Auckland 25%, and nationally a little bit less. And that takes us quite nicely to the REINZ data that came out today for July. Of course, REINZ has a bit of a vested interest too, seeing as they're the peak body for real estate agents in New Zealand. But it is interesting just to see what they say about what is going on at the moment. And they started out by saying that July 2026 data shows a New Zealand housing market where prices remain steady and sales hit within a normal historical range. But the pace of activity has slowed as buyers remain cautious and regions continue to diverge. And they show that the national median sale price is 760,000 New Zealand dollars, down 0.7% year on year, while sales were down 10% compared with July 2025. And then they try to put the sales into context with 35 years of sales records, placing July 2026 among the historical midpoint for the month. However, properties, they say, did take longer to sell, with the national median days to sell at 50 days, up 2 days year on year, and the fifth slowest July on record since they began keeping records back in 1992. And they also make the point that inventory was elevated, although that was driven more by properties taking longer to sell than by new listings coming onto market. And the REINZ said there is still activity in the market with people buying and selling property every day. What has changed is the pace. Buyers are taking time to carefully consider their options, and sellers are sometimes allowing more time for the right buyer to come along. In a more patient market, the judgment of a local real estate professional to help guide consumers remains critical. Yeah, well, there you go. Just talking your book. And remember, 5 years of falling prices. And it's worth noting here that the 0.7% fall nationally comprised a 1.4% fall excluding Auckland, but another 3.6% fall in Auckland, that's year on year. And month on month, Auckland was down 4.1% to take it to 940,000 New Zealand dollars. And the index, which isn't quite the same as the median house price, also fell nationally down 0.4%, but in Auckland down 1.7%. So it's down, down. Prices continue to be down. And they provide this rather helpful little graphic that shows the gap between the North and the South Island performance has widened further in July, with several southern markets posting positive results. For example, the Otago Price Index reached an all-time high of 4,366, but actually was down 7% to $679,000. Based on the annual median price changes. And they say that the index exceeded its previous peak set earlier in 2026. So it's an interesting question about the relationship between house price indices and the reported prices themselves. Make of it what you will. And they said that Canterbury's sales at 1,085 was actually the fourth highest since July. And that's since they introduced the records from 1992. In contrast, Wellington's sales at 524 were equal fifth lowest, and the days to sell at 55 were the third longest July result on record. And the REINZ went on to say that interest rates, inflation and the election affects everyone, but local employment and regional economic strength can make a significant difference to how these pressures are felt. Labour figures released in August, by the way, reinforced the picture. Unemployment was at 6% in the North Island, compared with 3.7% in the South Island. While outside our July data period, the figures align with what our members are telling us, the CEO said, where employment is holding up, the property market is generally holding up too. And then they go on to talk about the key influences ahead. The Reserve Bank's July official cash rate increase, ongoing costs of living pressures, global uncertainty, and the November general election all shaped market sentiment. And they went on to say, according to REINZ members, a wait-and-see approach ahead of the election was increasingly evident among some buyers, sellers, and investors. Our members are telling us they're seeing less urgency around some property decisions as the election gets closer, with some buyers or sellers opting to wait and see how conditions develop. At the same time, there are many reasons people are looking to buy or sell. Families grow, people relocate, and housing needs change, and those changing circumstances keep the market moving, well, at least to some extent. And they finalise their thoughts here that there is also no one single factor shaping behaviour. The official cash rate increase and the November election are part of the picture, alongside housing finances, alongside household finances, job security, and wider economic confidence. How those factors affect decisions differs from household to household and region to region. Sounds to me like, yes, go granular. It's really important to understand that actually the averages mask. Funny that, it's really important, especially now. And just coming back to the regional data, 8 of the 16 regions recorded positive year-on-year median price movements, with the West Coast and Gisborne the strongest performers. They said the West Coast had a median price of $390,000, up 14.7% year-on-year, but only from 35 sales, so small numbers. The region's three-month median of $400,000 was unchanged from the same period last year, indicating a steadier view of recent price trends. Gisborne, with a median price of $625,000, was up 9.6% year-on-year. Despite the strong median price, properties took longer to sell, although entry-level and mid-priced homes continued to attract buyer interest, they said. And other notable median prices were Marlborough, up 7.1% to $675,000, Waikato, up 3.4% to $760,000, and Northland, up 3.1% to $675,000. And it's also worth highlighting, of course, that there were falls, not highlighted in the release, in Hawke's Bay and in Taranaki and in Auckland, down 3.6% to 940,000. And the Bay of Plenty, down 1.9%. And as I highlighted, Otago dropped, Tasman is down, Nelson is down, although there are movements positive in other areas. They do focus on the glass half full, as you might expect. One final piece of information that they shared was that national listings decreased slightly by 0.5% year-on-year to 7,698 in July, reflecting that stock is building due to the slower pace of sales. Southland was the only region where inventory decreased year-on-year, demonstrating that this region is continuing to absorb new stock quickly. Taranaki recorded the largest percentage increase in unsold inventory compared to July 2025, and Auckland recorded 3,075 listings, up 9.4% on July 2025. So what are we to make of all this? Well, the point I want to make is that, sure, you can spin the story to an extent, but when you look at the data tells you something really quite important. Higher listings tends to support falling prices. And really, there is no evidence over in New Zealand that the markets are recovering, with more uncertainty ahead from the path of interest rates as well as the election. And coming back to Australia, let me just come back to this final point. Because, of course, sure, the CBA can pivot to business lending over housing. But the truth is that actually there is a real question mark about the future direction of bank lending for mortgages and for the profitability of the banks. And I'm not seeing a lot of evidence on the ground from my surveys that households have really started to think now is a good time to buy. First-time buyers are still sitting on the sidelines. Those trading up are waiting. And those looking to trade down do not want to sell for cheaper. So we have quite a few people who are looking at the equity in their property, at least in theoretical terms, and mourning what it was compared to what it is now, and holding off to see what happens. So whilst we can have industry forces trying to talk the market up, from CBA and the other banks through to Jim Chalmers, when you look at what real ordinary people are doing, people who, by the way, are still under significant pressure, as I discussed yesterday, and with the risk of higher interest rates ahead, my perspective is simply this. We are at the start of a significant fall, and the New Zealand story can tell us a lot. Hold on to your hats. It's going to be quite a ride. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.